Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to episode number 67 of the Free Cities Podcast. Well, I am back from bitterly cold Mongolia. Happy to say my yearly expedition to migrate over the Altai Mountains with a Mongolian family has ended in success again for me, however. It was certainly the hardest I've experienced in the 10 years of doing it. Day three in particular was so bad we actually had to turn back due to very high winds and snow, and that was a first for me, something that's never happened before on that trip. Right now though, I'm sitting here at my kitchen table next to the Rayburn, kicking out the heat, dog at feet. Outside through the window I can see snow on top of the Black Mountains. To be perfectly honest, right now all is well and I'm very happy to be home. Today's guest is someone who is also used very much to the cold weather. Sandra Bielos is a developer slash programmer who is also the co-creator of Liberstadt, an innovative Norwegian community founded on the principles of non-aggression and voluntarism. In this episode, you can expect an overview of the project, along with plenty of updates on how things are progressing, as well as some of Sandra's unique perspectives on life and, in particular, technology, which is very much one of his specialities. I always think that Liberstadt is one of the lesser known projects in the Free Cities ecosystem. Nevertheless, I think it's most definitely one to watch. I'll leave you all the contact details in the show notes if you want to reach out to them, and maybe you would like to inquire about acquiring your own slice of Norwegian free paradise. I'll leave that one up to you to decide. In the meantime, of course, I'll always remind you to reach out to me with questions and suggestions via our social media channels or jump into the Telegram group, link in bio. And never forget that if all else fails, you always have the option to just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Sandra Bielos. So, obviously, I want to talk about Liberstadt, but also I quite like a few of your own ideas, or at least what you write about anyway. So, because I found a lot of that a little bit even more interesting. but obviously we have to talk about Liberstadt.
Yeah.
And I found it interesting, actually, you just said that you were much more open about it, about the place where, you know, in the past.
Yeah.
And you've quietened down a little bit. Was there a reason for that, or did it just make sense to little bit more hush about things like this?
Yeah, there's multiple things, but one is sort of the experience that we had with the journalist. Basically, came up to us, talked to us, and we talk always honest and freely. And then he turns around and he goes to the politicians, and I ask politicians, "There's some crazy people up in the forest here. What do you think about what they're thinking?" So it's always about having the opposite and creating a sort of maybe a dispute and opposition where there really isn't anything to do. Mm-hmm. And we also had, like, we were posting videos and stuff on YouTube, and we were blowing up mountains, showing that on YouTube. So eventually the people for the municipality, they came up and did an inspection. It was before COVID, so it was three years ago, I think. And basically, it was more or less after that. But it's also a lot of... I meet people, I ask them if they know about Liberstadt, and they don't know about it. But I would guess probably 50% of the Norwegian population knows about Liberstad, because we were in sort of the national news after we launched the project, and it's been in like press as well a few times.
Is that, and when you say you've been in the national news, is that in that negative sense that you just mentioned, or
no? The press have always been mostly positive. It's made, the negative is sort of the comments that the politicians come give in response to our views and our policies and stuff. But most of the media has been mostly positive. We said that to the National Broadcasting Channel. We did, on the news, we said we didn't want to do an interview with them because they're financed with tax, right? Right. But we had a nice dialogue with them. So they came up and then just stood outside the property and recorded sort of into the property. Really? But we said if it was a good piece, we said that next time we'll do an interview with you. So it might happen again. But more recently, we decided that we want to be more open, but we'll just do it internationally, because there's a lot of interest internationally. And also I think like probably in the future, the majority of people in Liberstad will be foreigners and not native Norwegians, I think. So it's we're opening up more and more, especially now with ChatGPT. So we can just generate the blog posts mostly. That helps a lot, because we're doing a lot of things right. So but the main reason is time. I think it's time management. We need to build stuff. We can't just...
Maybe you should summarize the whole thing, if you can, in as succinct a way as possible. What is Liberstad? How and why did it come into being? And maybe that should set the scene for us.
Yeah. So I think it's... I can phrase this many ways. So Liberstad is not one thing, and it's also evolved from what we initially thought and initially planned. Initially, we said we wanted to make a private city in Norway, free private city. And we said that we wanted to consider zoning and going through the regulatory approval and stuff for zoning. But eventually, as we developed this project, it sort of evolved more and more to becoming more like we initially on the website, it's always been about the non-aggression principle. That's been a foundation. And by extension of that, you also have the philosophy of voluntarism and anarcho-capitalism, which is very near to our hearts in Liberstad. But it's the non-aggression principle that's been the whole point the whole time. But now we're getting more and more, I would say, not pure in sort of in terms of the philosophy and stuff, but we don't want to have anything. We don't acknowledge the government at all. We don't acknowledge state. We think the state is just, it's a mental construct that humans have come up with. And then people believe in this concept, and they perform human actions based on this belief, right? That's the way the state works. So now we said we're not going to do any negotiations. We're not going to file any applications. But obviously, as I'm going to talk about in my presentation here at the conference tomorrow as well, when a madman comes to you with a gun, right, you try to de-escalate the situation, right? So. We're going to make our actually first application to the municipality now. And it's retroactive because we blew up more mountain than we're allowed to do without application. So that's one application
we're
going to
do now. Let me ask you, initially when the idea came to set up this community,
yeah,
did you imagine that you were going to do it with permission? Or is that...
No.
No, not at all. No. So it's purely like... We don't acknowledge this outside force. We're going to do what we would do if we didn't know about this thing. And obviously that I think as strategies go, that is the one that fails the most in my experience of watching these projects. Yeah. But you've gone down that route now and you're well and truly. Yeah. So what are you then saying to the municipality? Is that about planning permission or something?
Up until now, we've been pretty sort of restrictive in terms of what we've done on the property. We actually haven't constructed any new buildings. We only renovated existing buildings that are there. We're going to start building one new building now. So they've been sort of complaining a little bit about stuff we've done on the property and stuff, but it's been a dialogue back and forth, basically, and the last time they were up there now, they sort of said sorry that we haven't heard in 2 years due to COVID and blah, blah. So they had a lot of points that they complained on, but basically it's just the blowing up the mountain that we believe sort of is something we need to apply for. And they also, basically got permission to continue work on improving the roads that is already there, because there's a lot of roads in this it's a farm property with a lot of forest, so done forestry there. So we're just going to build out all the roads now to the properties that we sold to people.
That, I mean, it sounds like a uniquely, well, I'd say it's almost Scandinavian way of doing things.
Yeah.
Because in my country, if someone did that,
yeah,
I think the police would come around immediately.
Yeah, they would. Yeah.
But from what I know of Norway, it seems like a very Norwegian way of dealing with this thing. Can you just, before we go on any further, can you just describe the place, the property? What's going on there? And when you say blow up a mountain, do you mean dynamite a mountain because you want to build something? Or?
Yeah, we need material for roads and
right, okay.
Stuff,
so how big, how many hectares is it? How much, you know, whatever?
Yeah, I always make this mistake when I'm talking about properties, but the best way of thinking about it is like a regular property where they have a regular family house is usually like 1,000 square meters, which is 100 by 100 meters. So that's one plot, usually, with a house. So we have 1,500 of those in Liberstad.
That's
the whole property.
Right. Well, that's a lot. So 1,500 times 100, that's like 100...
So it's 2 kilometers
right,
in length,
yeah,
and about 1 kilometer in breadth.
Wow, big.
And width. And then, so we started the project, we rented the property for 1 year, and we pre-sold sort of recreational plots where people can build cabins.
So was there anything illegal in the eyes of the law about what you were doing there? Anyone could quite rightly go and
It all depends, of course, on what you sort of initially. I mean, the properties was fairly cheap compared to a regulated plot, right? So it came at risk for the people who invested in this project, and that's sort of, that's where the legal issue would have come if we had said that we're going to guarantee a permission to build a mansion, right? If we had said that, then you would get into problems. But the project itself, it's feasible to do. There's a lot of farm and agriculture sort of forest property that you can get exemptions from the zoning regulations to build cabin plots. And that's usually not a problem, especially not when it's far from the cities. Because there's a lot of people who build cabins. Eventually, it might get too many cabins, and they might say no. But that also, like, it's 1,500 plots, basically, and 750 of those is sort of dedicated to the recreational area, and only 250 of those, again, is sold for properties. So the people that's going to live up in the forest, it's not going to be like a tight coupled cabins. Everything is very spread, so you get the forest around you. So that's the first sort of population area. And then we have the sort of camping area, which we've started developing. So we have people living up there. There's 14, 15 people living there permanently now, more or less.
40 or 50?
14. 14, 15. So we have a camping area where people live in buses, RVs, and caravans. And then we have the farmhouse, which is basically 2 apartments. We have a guy from Poland living there and a guy from France. And there's John living up there with his wife and 2 kids. And we have another guy from Poland living in the guest house there. And I have a cabin just a 2 minutes drive from city center. So that's sort of the beginning. And then, longer term plan is behind John's house. We just exchanged some property with a neighbor property. So that's where we want to have permanent rest. That's the first time we're going to have a lot of permanent residency in Liberstad. And then likely we'll just hire a company to do the drawing and everything. And most likely it will be sort of approved with the municipality for those buildings.
Okay. Excuse me. Can I ask who bought the land originally? Like, where do you, and is it is it expensive to get 1 kilometer by 2 kilometers worth of land in Norway?
No,
it's cheap.
It's very cheap. So farmland in Norway is fairly cheap because it's there's no real like market value on it, right? You're not allowed to overprice it too much, so it's sort of regulated how much you can sell it for, and you also need to live on the land and work the land when you buy it.
But that obviously doesn't help you when you want to build on it, though, does it? Does that give you extra complications because it's...
No, not really, because there's like the Liberstadt property right now is just the farmable land is like smaller than the lawn of some big houses probably here in UK and this country. So it's, the farmable land is very small, right? So you can't do much. It's mostly forestry. You just basically have to maintain the forest, right? Cut down some trees
And people don't mind if you build on forest land in Norway. I suppose you've got a lot of forest land, haven't you?
Yeah, it's like Norway's greenifying, right? It's overpopulated with trees. Seen some photos back from earlier when people had sheep and goats on the mountains and they actually kept them clean. So it was super nice, like going on a hike. These days, everything is overgrown everywhere.
So you think you're doing it? You're doing the world a favor by chopping trees down. I like that narrative.
But the thing, like you asked to explain the properties. Basically, you're driving this road to a town called Bjelland. This is just 7 minutes drive from Liberstad center. So you go into this dirt road. And so driving this dirt road during the summer, you can feel the heat. And you forget you have a mobile phone in your pocket, and you come in there, and there's this beautiful weather, and you see this farm and the building, and so it's going like going into a completely different world, basically. And you have fantastic forests, and there's the valley of the city center, and as you go on the tops here, you can see extremely far if you go to the top of the properties, and we have the water there. We have the small sort of lake in the city center, and we have a big lake on the top with a heart-shaped island. It's super nice. And then we have the Mandal River, which we don't own the land going all the way down to the river. Hopefully we want to purchase some of that land and have sort of summer, you can have boats and stuff on the river. So there's a lot of, if you love nature, it's super nice. Yeah.
But when you say we would like to purchase land, who is that? Are you a community of people? Or?
Yes. So we initially tried to purchase the land using a stock company registered by the government in Norway. And there's only one or two farms in all of Norway actually done that. So we tried it initially because then it wouldn't have been connected to an individual. Right. Because that's the big main issue. If you have a connected to an individual, that individual can get debts, and then you suddenly own and he can take the property. So right now it's owned by John's wife. She owns the whole property in the eyes of the government. But our goal is, and we also registered a company called like Liberstad Drift LTD, a type of like incorporated company. And that's basically the company that did the sales of the properties. And our plan is to actually delete that company next year, as soon as all the property owners have sort of gotten the exact design of their properties, then we're going to delete this company. And then the property itself, in the eyes of the government, that's going to be owned by a, what's called a...
Co-op?
Not a corporation, but
we call it a cooperative. Different to a corporation.
Yeah, it won't even be a cooperative. It's like a foundation.
Oh, okay.
A foundation, right. Yeah. So like non-profit foundation is going to, in the eyes of the government, going to own it. And that's going to make it very hard for them to actually take it back in any way. And if they would ever come there and try to take it away, they would have like hundreds of people who say that, I own this. You can't take this part of the land because I own this. But it's like the way we do it is like we have recognize that we need to replace everything that the government does. So we need to separate us completely, right? We're not using Norwegian krone, right? We're not using the Norwegian law system or anything. We're not using the Norwegian identities, right? So we have our own, like, based on decentralized identities. That's the way people make identities in Liberstad. And that's the only thing that's valid in Liberstad. So you create companies. We have our own company registry, our own identity, our own economy and everything. So I think that's super important if you're going to have success in the way you do a project like this.
Oh God, I've got so many questions now. Let's start with, start with the money. What are you using as for value exchange then?
Right now we're using Bitcoin and Citycoin.
Citycoin is your own coin?
Yeah.
And on what blockchain is that?
Or on a Citychain, that's the blockchain.
Oh, you've even created your own chain as well?
Yeah.
And how's that maintained? Is there, who validates the transactions and stuff?
It's using proof of stake, but it's a fork of something called Stratis, which is a project from the UK. They basically built a .NET implementation of Bitcoin. So it's or the same software can actually run on the Bitcoin network as a full node. It hasn't like Taproot and all the new technologies implemented, so it's not being maintained because that's going to be too costly. But it's basically the same thing, right? But we have the proof of stake instead of using proof of work, basically to make it more secure, right? Because we can't compete with Bitcoin.
Right? I didn't get that bit. How do you connected it with Bitcoin then? What did you say?
It's using the exact same protocol.
Oh, okay, the protocol.
UTXOs and the RPC protocol and everything. Mm. So all the software I build, like when I build like marketplace or tokenizing properties and everything, and we also have atomic swap service that we've developed ourselves. So you can swap from Bitcoin to Citycoin without any intermediaries, and it's completely secure, can't be tricked in any way. And all of this is based on Bitcoin protocol. So we're using all the economy within Liberstadia today is like in Citycoin, and the price is fairly similar to Norwegian krona. And that's also sort of something we recognized, is that people need stable value to reason about the value of stuff, right? So you come here and a bottle of water, and it's like, that's 52,500 satoshis. Like the brain of humans doesn't work that way.
Is it? So is it a stable coin pegged to the krona?
It is pegged in a way that we back it in Liberstad. So if you get your hands on a Citycoin, you can go to Liberstad and you can buy stuff for it. You can buy food, you can buy groceries, you can buy beer. We have our own brewery in Liberstad, so you can go and buy beer there.
So you mean you buy it with krona and the krona is backing it?
No, you would buy a Citycoin with Bitcoin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's so complicated. I have a bit of a bugbear about like coins.
Yeah.
Bitcoin, I'm all in. Coins, because it's so easy to see the incentive model behind certain coins being, let's just issue, like I'm the issuer of coins, therefore let's issue a ton of coins. I can do whatever I want. It's a version of the fiat system we all hate.
Yeah. So, I mean, Citycoin is mostly centralized. We had like this mining initially. You can mine with CPU, so there's people, so it's distributed in a way, and there's staking, so you get staking rewards. But I mean, most of the money, me and John is controlling it, but we're also backing it. So we're actually trying to buy back as much as possible, because we can't just give it to people. Because then we would be ruined, basically, because we can't back it. So we are actually trying to buy it back as much as possible. So the idea is that maybe people up there working, they get the salary in Citycoin, and then they spend that Citycoin to pay for electricity, to pay for the rent, and pay for the food up there, right? But we're very agnostic. I was like, I have no idea what kind of type of money we're going to use in the future. I don't really care about money. Like, I love Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin's going to be the future for everything. That's also why everything I do, I make it compatible with Bitcoin. Mm. But the interesting stuff is everything around it, with a decentralized identity and building marketplaces, property register, and everything that comes around.
It's interesting because we visited Montelibro and they've got their own coin. And that was the first time I'd come face to face with this, because I think I ended up talking for about 3 hours with them, trying to get my head around it, because it worries me a little bit.
Yeah.
And I must admit, by the end of it, I thought, okay, it is the best solution right now. And I think, I mean, I don't know what you're thinking, but because it's open to, you know, a lot of corruption, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, you can stop it as well. Like someone from the outside world could come and destroy your economy, which is obviously a big attack vector for you, which you don't want. So, but what I realized at Montelibro is, Bitcoin wasn't good enough for them at that stage because of the volatility. It's not something you can transact with on a day-to-day basis if you're still interacting with the outside world, which everyone is.
Yeah.
So is that kind of how you're thinking as well?
I mean, I've had communications with the Montelibro people for many years, And also, it was very hard for me to get a grasp on their economy and everything they've done there. So we recently, I think it was a month ago, me and Anton, we set up, properly got an introduction to their sort of their Telegram bot and stuff.
Yeah.
So I established something called the Liberstad City Fund. It's basically I can collect money from in crypto from external people, and we will do investments in the different companies in Liberstad. So you don't need to have any like local knowledge. It's just a fund, and you will get some dividends from that. And I agree with you. I think like when Web3 came around and all the tokens and everything, it's complex. I mean, I first time got into Bitcoin in 2010. I built a full like Bitcoin casino on Bitcoin in 10-11. Never launched it because the guy who was going to buy the domain name, he never did it, and I didn't want to have it in my name if there was some bugs or something, or some issues. So it was never launched. I lost all my Bitcoin twice. But I'm very technical. And even I have issues understanding all of that, because it's a lot of economy stuff and things going on there. But I think our goal, especially in the beginning, was to, we need to make it as workable for a guy who's a farmer up in the rural Norway, who doesn't understand anything, and he doesn't even use his phone, right? That's the people we need to support. So right now I purchased a bunch of like these very new NFC cards. It's the same as the Bolt card. Mm-hmm. So you can actually put like prepaid Lightning transactions on it, and we're going to use the same thing for identity, for tickets and access control. So when you need to go into the building, to the store, for example, right? We don't need to have people sitting in the store selling groceries all the time. It's you just present your card and you unlock the door, and it's connected to your decentralized identity. So we know who actually went into that building at that time, right? And because it's the same thing sitting in the bar on a Saturday. Right now, we're just writing down on paper, like Sandra, one beer, two beer, three beer, 10 beers one evening. And then I get an invoice the day afterwards. But soon we're going to be paying with these cards, because people need to be able to pay without having a phone. They don't need an app, right? They can fill it up if they're experienced enough, but if they don't have experience enough, we need to make some terminal, or you can just go to a store, right, and say, I need to fill up this. Here is some cash, right, and they can fill it up with some coins.
Your own coin, not like
now. Right now I'm going to use it with Citycoin, but you can also use it for Bitcoin, no problem at all, because it's the same card as the Bolt card, actually.
Because obviously my issue with something like Citycoin is it's dangerous, and because you know, like, there's no question that decentralized money is an important aspect of all of this stuff that's going on, free cities wise, you know. Yeah. And obviously using your own coin is putting yourself in a situation, A, where you could be corrupted yourself.
Yeah.
And two, someone can come in and destroy your whole network, because it's basically got a very large attack surface, which is you or something. So is it, I mean, what do you think about that?
It depends on sort of the usage of it, right? So if there was an exploit in the algorithm that gave someone sort of a hidden amount of revenue from staking, you couldn't even see it in the blockchain, right? What would happen is that some people would come up to Liberstad, would spend a lot of money, and we would have no idea where that money come from, right? But it would still be like a physical limit on it, because it's the store up there and it's the groceries that is there, right? So I don't think you can hack the whole block. We can shut down the blockchain tomorrow, right? It wouldn't be a problem for us, right?
True.
Because we could just take Norwegian, we're not going to take Norwegian krona. I'm not going to say that on this podcast, but we could take some fiat, or we can take Bitcoin or whatever the next day, right? There's no problem. But I think it's like if you have financial stuff, right, with loans and dividends and interests and a big system, that's when it gets scary. And I think we've seen that many times with different tokens, shit coins that drop to zero, right? So you have stable coins connected to the shit coin, and then it collapses and it's gone, right? So I think like for a big world economy, we need something like Bitcoin. We have to only use Bitcoin for important stuff, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, my thought was you as the issuer of currency could just, you know, you imagine one morning you realize we need to blow up another mountain, but we haven't got enough money.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, well, let's just print a few of, let's print some more city coins and pay for the digger with that. You know, I have, that's the temptation.
Yeah, I get a salary in city coin, right, every month.
Okay.
I've.
But where does it come
from?
Where does the city coin that pays you come from?
Initially, we did a pre-mine that was given to like three foundations. And one of those foundations was the City Chain Foundation, which is basically responsible for developing the chain and the software. And that's basically where I got my salary, right, every month. I've probably spent 2 months' salary. Everything else I've just saved up. Because when I'm in Liberstad and I buy stuff, I don't use Citycoin myself, right? Because I know that it goes on our economy, basically. So I pay with Bitcoin or Norwegian kroner. Right. And same John does, right? So we're supporting. There's no point in me inflating the economy with city coins, because it's just going to destroy everything in this early stage. But I understand, like, eventually when I get further down the line. So the thing is, like, the only two ways to get city coin right now is from those foundations that got the pre-mine. Those we are planning on potentially just burning, so making in. Useless, and then you have the income from staking, same as Bitcoin mining, is also fairly low, right? So the amount of money that's in circulation is fairly well controlled right now, and that's why it's like there's not many people running nodes, there's not a lot of people using the wallet and everything. So for us, for our use right now, it's something that works pretty well for bootstrapping, basically Liberstad. But my long-term goal is obviously to just have it as Bitcoin.
Mm. It was an interesting thing to come to terms with for me.
Yep.
It was that maybe there is a place for it in the beginning, but obviously, you know, the greatest plans of men can turn into, you know, 10 years time.
Yeah.
You're like, right, I've got, suddenly the price of your coin is big. You realize, shit, I've got all this money, you know. Yeah. You never know. It's what I like about Bitcoin is it takes the human element away.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes away that temptation because you can't do anything. You can't print more of it. You can't. You have to earn it. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, as an intermediary, I'll just say good luck.
Yeah. Thank you.
My other question at the same time was but it was about decentralized identity. But you kind of answered that question. Yeah. So you're creating identity, for want of a better word, cards. On as hashes of on the Bitcoin network or something like that? Are you?
No, right now, I mean, the DID specification, it's like a W3C standard now. There's multiple different implementations. One of them is DID Ion, which Microsoft and TBD and some other companies is running sort of instances of that. And that does attestation on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Right.
So you can send in, I think it's 10,000 operations per block, and they generate a hash that they actually pay to put that on the blockchain.
It's just an identity.
Yeah, it's basically just a document that says that these keys can manage this identity. So you can have multiple keys. So that's the thing, like you might have heard about Nostr.
Yeah, I'm on Nostr. Yeah.
So I developed the Blockcore Notes Nostr client. And so that's the main difference between Nostr and DID is that you can have multiple keys and you can replace them. Right? Mm. So there's a standard for it. And I made my own DID. It's called DID IS. And it's basically just a super simple service. And you don't need to do attestation. And it's free as well. So anyone can just publish. So you install a wallet, create new identity, and you click a button, and it's published. And that's it.
And in terms of Nostr, for example, your digital identity is a kind of part of the point of it is anonymity, right?
Yep.
But obviously, in a place like where you are, it's not it doesn't make sense for it to be anonymous. Is that even a thing? Is something you're thinking about, or is it just that you want to use Bitcoin? You want to use a blockchain to do this
because I mean,
anonymity. Yeah,
it's something very close to my heart, and I believe that like everyone should be able to communicate and share anything online, safely and securely. People should properly know that this what I'm doing right now can't be tracked. Right, that's the problem. And you know you can be tracked, we're going to censor yourself. Even though you think yourself, you're a free spirit, if you know that there's a chance you can be tracked, you're not going to write certain things, right? So that's going to happen. So the thing we do with the identity is like, you can be anonymous if you want to in some settings and in some settings not. So I have multiple identities. So ownership in the companies in Liberstad is not Sondre. I don't, there's nobody named Sondre that owns any stocks in Liberstad. But there is an identity that owns stocks. So that's sort of my business me, right? And then I can have my social identity, something else. And we do the same thing like with the properties that we sold in Liberstad. You need to make a DID, but you don't need to make a public profile connected to it. But you need to make an internal profile that we have on you. So we have a file in our database that says that this DID belongs to John Olsen, right? But nobody else needs to know that. And that our idea is also we're going to have this property registry. So all exchange of properties needs to go through this registry, and they're going to have the names of all the properties, but it's not going to be public information for anyone else to know. So nobody, because like, I guess it's like that in every country, but especially in Norway, like you can search an address and you can find a name of who lives in that address, and you won't be able to do that in Liberstad.
I suppose a hardcore anon would say, but then what happens when someone hacks your server and gets all the names?
Yeah.
This is the trouble with the anonymity, you see, I think. And I don't know a better way of doing it, but
there are solutions for it.
But I, for example, if everyone in the world had one of these DIDs, right?
Yeah.
It would be great. But it wouldn't take long for an AI to work out roughly who's who, would it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Just in the way they're interacting.
Everyone is going to have DIDs very soon, especially in Europe, right? European Union, they're using this standard for, they even used it for some of the COVID passes that people got during COVID. It's based on the same standard. And they are working on issuing these DIDs to all the citizens of all of EU. And then the issuer is going to be sort of the different countries is going to be the issuer of these DIDs. So that's coming.
Okay, all right.
That's
coming. That's
and that's,
interesting.
That's dangerous because, as you say, like, if you screw up, right? Like you have your social security number today, right? It is it's not sensitive information, but you normally shouldn't share it with too many people, right? But these digital identities, we're going to use that for everything because today the social security, you often use it for banking and insurance and very important stuff. So you don't use it everywhere. But when we get these government IDs, right? Websites is going to use this for login. Yeah. Right, and then they're going to know who you are because they're going to say, oh, I need to know who you are if you're going to access our web shop to do some shopping. So I think that's going to be disastrous.
Do you happen to know, like governmental DIDs, do you know what kind of protocol they're using?
For
like what you're just talking about there?
They're using DID.
But I misunderstood then. What is DID?
DID is just, it's a standard for decentralized identifiers.
It is decentralized.
Yeah, it's decentralized.
So what? It uses cryptography.
It's decentralized in name, right? So you can make a DID, which is a centralized database.
Yeah.
Right? So and the thing is like when you make a computer system or a website in the future, it's going to say, hey, enter your DID, right? And it can be DID Eon, DID Gov EU or something. And when you supply that address to the website, that website is going to go and look up in a database somewhere and verify it.
So it's not going to use cryptography. It's not going to use a key.
It is cryptography. All of it is based on cryptography.
But in that case, is it not that it doesn't look you up in a database? It just checks, it hashes something and says,
because what you're supplying usually is just the ID, like the social security number. And then it goes to the government or the Ion network, and it requests the DID document. So the DID document says that these are the keys, and these are the different keys for the different purposes, right? So you have one key that you want to have for communication, chatting. You can have an encryption key that you want to use if people want to communicate you in an encrypted channel, and there's other sort of purposes you can use for those keys.
Hmm.
It's all based on cryptography, but the government one, they're going to be controlling your keys. You're not going to be controlling those keys.
Hmm. And because this is always how I think, you can back engineer those, can't you? Like, I'm only saying that because during COVID, for example, There were, you know, the little scanners that
that
scanned it, and it said tick. You know, if you had the vaccination or whatever,
you couldn't back in engineer.
But there were plenty of places you could go to. You could, for example, you could. Someone had done something because there were websites where you could go. You check this.
Yeah, but there were some of them that where it was possible, but they weren't built on DID. And the second part of the DID stuff is the VC, the verifiable credential. And the COVID passes was a verifiable credential. And that's basically a JSON document that is signed with these keys here, right? So when you went to a doctor and you got this official document, he signed that with a key, and his key is trusted by some government health institution, their sort of root key, right? So you could go into your app and you could see the data, you can take it, and if you copy it over to your sort of device, it would still be valid, right? But it would be me, my identity. So if they didn't check the name or face, I'm not sure if there was face in it, but they probably checked the name. So if you have the exact same file, right? If you don't manipulate the file, then it would be valid. But you couldn't change the name. If you tried to change the name from Sonora to Tim, it would be invalid.
I thought, if
there was a backdoor to hack this, then it would be a backdoor to hack Bitcoin.
That's basically what I thought. Because I'll tell you why it confused me, because I had two, as an experiment, I had two COVID passes, a real one and a fake one. And I ran these COVID passes through a authenticator, and they both gave the right names. They were both ticks, but they both gave the right names that were on the COVID passes. And I couldn't work out how it had done it, because I was thinking that, like, well, hold on a minute. You know, if this is real cryptography, how has someone done this? Do you know? Do you know how it's done?
No. I would have to see that example, right?
I've probably still got them somewhere. I'll show you.
At this time, it was also the DID. It wasn't even a ratified standard with W3C yet. So there's some of the implementations might not even be like accordance to the standard. And there was a lot of weird things going on during COVID. It's the same in Norway. We had the tracking of people. Like the phone would, if we were close to each other, the phones would sort of use Bluetooth and see if we're close together. The first implementation of this in Norway was like completely centralized, and the government knew all movement of all people. And then some IT people in my industry complained, and then they started making it better. So it was sort of encrypted and some signatures. I'm not sure of all the details, but at least it wasn't possible to sort of just look into the database and see where everyone were. So it was more anonymized. Everything else with the passes and everything like that, people just, they paid money to a doctor and they just got his certificate that he had this needle.
It was very interesting, whole scenario.
I'll tell you something that was interesting about COVID. Like during COVID, like a lot of people sort of, they woke up, right?
Yes.
So we had people coming to Liberstadt, a lot of interesting people. We chatted with them for hours, evenings, right? And there was a lot of movement and engagement. And then as soon as the restrictions went away, it's all gone. I never saw those people again. It's like it was a big community, right? It's hundreds and thousands. There was thousands of people in Norway. Like a lot of people, doctors and farmers and everything. They wanted to work together. After COVID restrictions, all of them went away.
So what does that tell you then?
Tells me that we need more crisis, right? And longer crisis. We need people to wake up. So I think that they're doing it themselves, right? The states and the politicians. They're going to make some huge crisis coming in the future. And I think that's only going to be very positive for all the free city projects, because we're going to get people waking up and then they want to get out of it.
It's reminded me what you just said then of something. I think you probably know this guy. You know Pavel Luptak? Do you know him? I'm pretty sure he came to visit
you. Yes, he came visiting us this summer and he wrote some very good blog post afterwards.
Okay, well, I interviewed Pavel for this podcast. He's a really interesting guy. Yeah. And he said something to me then, which kind of I'd never thought of before, but it's really stuck with me since. And it was that the vast majority of people don't actually really care about freedom.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't waste your time trying to convince everyone. Like, a bit like what you just said then, you know, when the shit's the fan, everyone wants to get on the freedom bandwagon. But really, the truth is, most people don't care.
Yeah.
And Pavel said, so just look out for yourself, your own family, your immediate friends, and fuck the rest, excuse my language.
Yeah.
Which I kind of resisted that idea probably subconsciously for quite a long time. But now I think, yeah, maybe you're right. And I look at, say, Lieberstadt and think, yeah, you're kind of doing that. It's like build something else. And if people want to come, they come. But we're not expecting them to come, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about that? Is that...
I wholeheartedly agree.
Oh, God. And it's like, I'm going to have to start adopting this idea soon,
aren't
I? It's
like, because I have some friends. They consider themselves anarcho-capitalists, but they're living in Norwegian society and Norwegian businesses registered with the government, and they never come to Lieberstadt, right? Because they're in this zone of luxury and happiness, and they're selling their freedom, right, for luxury. That's basically what we're doing. Like, as soon as... If you want absolute freedom, you can go into the forest, live alone. If someone kills you, it's not illegal, right? It's not a problem if someone kills you, because you were alone there. There was no rules, no nothing. But when you come together more than one person, we start having society, and then we need to sort of restrict our freedom, right? My freedom stops where your freedom starts, right? And that's the thing that the whole philosophy with Lieberstadt, actually, when coming into that, is like, We think that cities is the largest way of organizing society of humans. I don't know how big a city can be, like Tokyo, like massive. I believe that we should have cities, not nation states. So cities should compete, right, for people. And that's the way it should work. So we can experiment with different types of organizing and different type of rules and everything. But it's like, that's why me and John started Lieberstadt. It's like, I don't have time to go into the whole story behind it, because it was originally like John wanted to move into to a farm, basically, with his family. He wanted to get away from the city. But it's no fun just being alone in a farm, and you're defenseless, right? That's the thing. Like, that's a super important thing with Lieberstadt. We need to get more people, and we need to be multiple people together, because we're much stronger. That's the easiest way for the government to take out liberty people, is that when they're living in the cities, in apartments, all alone, you just come and pick up one-on-one, right? If you're together in a society, you can put up some borders and some gates, and you can do other things to sort of restrict their ability to shut you down. But I argued online, I read a lot of Mises content. I was one of the founders of the Mises Institute in Norway, in Oslo, many years ago. That's closed down now. And eventually I just figured out that we can't just sit discussing how many people have really converted, right? I don't know how many people have converted. I converted one friend to become vegan, at least.
Are you vegan yourself?
I'm vegan, yeah. Right. I've been vegan for 10 years now. So he used to be my best friend. So he's like a social democrat guy. But at least they did one thing right with him. But it's like, it's very hard to change people. And when you ask this, I have this sort of epiphany just a few days ago. I think that I don't think people change. I just think we find ourselves, right? So, and some people never find themselves, right? But the thing is, like, if everyone finds themselves, are we all liberty-loving people or not? I don't know.
I've always said yes. I think, and do you know why? Because I think, imagine when you're a kid, you understand liberty, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, you open the door from your house when you're a kid and you run outside like a nutter, don't you?
Yeah.
So for me, that gives me the impression that, yeah, we are. And it's kind of beaten out of you by the time you're a grown up. Because the truth is, and Pavel's right here, not many people really do care about liberty. And a lot of them, even when it's imperative, even when someone's locking them in a room, they're still not fighting back. They're just kind of giving in to it, you know. I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to think that everyone is on the side of freedom, actually, deep down. But... unfortunately, statistically, it doesn't look like that's true. Like.
Looking at history and looking at humanity, like I also came up with the understanding when I stopped sort of trying to convince people. That was when I realized that sort of people living in China, right? They have the freedom that they deserve, right? Because if they want more freedom, just go demand it. People are going to die, right? When they're trying to get freedom. Same in North Korea, right? They have the freedom. And I think people are happy still. I think people, humans can be happy in all kinds of situations, right? Mm. Just because you're super rich doesn't mean you're happy. And if you're a bit poor, you can still be happy. But it's like, so that sort of equalizes. And I think that might be connected to the issue with freedom, because we can't be happy all the time, right? Our brain doesn't work that way. It stops producing serotonin and other stuff. So we are always sort of equalizing. We're trying to reduce pain and have some happiness. And I think that's sort of a bigger driving factor than having freedom, because having freedom is tough. Like building Liberstadt, it's not easy. It's a lot of challenges. And just doing it itself is hard. But then you also have people around you with guns that doesn't approve of your project. They might come shut you down and they want to kill you or whatever, right? So it's like, it's not going to come for free, freedom. You can't ask anyone. You can't go and ask a police officer, give me more freedom, right? Because mm-hmm. he's going to follow the laws. That's his job. And so I don't think that it's genetically encoded in us to have freedom. But it might be. Like, I'll tell you a story when I grow up. So this, because when I started to think about this, and I'm thinking that we don't really change, and I'm sort of trying to figure out where does all this liberty ideas in my head come from, right? My brother used to be a member of the Communist Party in Norway. And then he started getting interested in Republican presidents in the U.S. And now he's sort of totally changed. And now he loves Israel and the U.S. and other things. So people can change, right? And I myself have gone through a lot of changes through my life. But I started thinking, why am I like I am today? And I remember when I was young, because I've been working since I was a kid, right? I made a newspaper. I was selling in the newspaper in the neighborhood, saving up money all the time. So we went on summer holiday. So I have an older sister and a little brother sitting in the car. We go to the closest store from the home. We're going to drive to the holiday camping area. And I come into the car, I'm sitting there and I have an ice cream. And my older sister and brother, they don't have ice creams.
They took it from you.
I spent my own money and have it saved. And they're crying or complaining. And then my mother runs in and buy ice cream for them.
Yeah.
And the feeling I had,
like, still working now.
Because I had forgotten about it, right? And I started thinking about it. I think that sort of fundamentally changed my life in many ways, that more than I think. Because I think the thing is, like, you're set when you're a certain age, right? If your parents fuck you up when you're growing up, you're gonna get fucked up as an adult. You can't fix it, I think. Because it's so important the first few years. And I think the same thing with Liberstadt. Like, it's super important that we get the kids involved and we make sure that we get the next generation to take over. We can't rely on immigrants. Like, social democracies today, they rely on immigrants for workers. But all the free city projects, eventually there's not enough freedom-loving people, so we need to reproduce.
According to your definition, though, I think everyone gets fucked up by their parents. Because look at that small incident, which your mother was probably completely, had no idea it was going on. Yeah. Yet you were sitting there having your life changed in a grand way. So almost certainly it does happen to everyone.
Yeah.
One thing I often think, though, is that in the case of your brother and his political stance, age has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because most people lean a little bit left when they're younger.
Yeah.
And most people lean a little bit right when they're older. And it comes down to quite obvious factors like taking on more responsibility as you get older, teaching you that actually preserving things and conserving things and responsibility lead to certain characteristics. Whereas when you're young, it's important you're a dreamer and you're this and that.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I think it's also the dance between individualism and collectivism. And they're all connected because, you know, some people veer towards the collective, very much so. When they want an opinion, they look to their fellow people to see how should I think or feel. And then there's other people who, and I'm one of these, I'm an individualist, and I always have been, you know, I don't think I learned it. It was, I'm even sure I had an experience which made me an individualist because I can't think of one.
Yeah.
But they are that is a very common experience in the freedom community, individualists versus collectivists, you know. And so I theoretically, it should be 50-50, you would have thought, for people that want to control others and people that just want to be left alone. But it seems like it's a minority that want to be left alone. It's a minority that want to be left alone and a minority that want to control, and then this massive wad of people in the middle who don't care. Yeah. And they end up going with the probably the one that causes them the least trouble, which is normally the controllers.
Yeah.
You know.
But I don't think most people don't want to be left alone. I think most people want to be left alone. But the minority just want to control people. So mostly narcissists and psychopaths, also known as politicians, government officials. So those people, when you have the whole school system, right? They're controlling all education and all media, right? So they're indoctrinating all of us to become pleasant, I don't know what the words like.
Good citizens.
We're okay with the life that we have, right? And then you have Hollywood creating these images of a successful and nice life and everything. And it's like one of the things I've worked full time since I was 17 years old, so I always had a lot of money, and I always spend everything. I'm very not good at money management. But like if I needed to buy some booze for my friends, right, because they went to school still, I could always purchase and buy for them. But the thing is, like, I forgot my whole point now.
You know what that just made me think of, though? When you just said, if I had money and my friends were at school and I bought them all stuff, that could still be that incident in the car working on you. That's you coping with it. You're like, do you know what? I'm going to pay for them before it's taken away from me. No, but that's there's a bit of reverse psychology there. It's like, it's not going to get taken away from me, so I'm just going to pay for them now. Yeah. I'm in control, you know. But yeah, I can't remember what you're talking about either.
I forgot it. It was something about the money and quite a bit of stuff, but I don't remember.
Look, it doesn't matter. What about the neighbors that you have around there?
The funny thing, like, there's right beside our property, there's a farmhouse. Her grandfather grew up there, and this is just a holiday home. And we've spoken to them, and they said that their kids don't want to inherit it and have it, so we'll probably buy that when they're finished. And the other one is the brother of her, and the interesting thing is, like, after we've been there a few months or maybe a year or two, he revealed himself as a libertarian.
Oh, right.
So he supported the projects very much.
That's
basically the only one that sort of have visibility into Liberstadt. And that's just holiday properties. So there's no permanent residents that have any view into the Liberstadt property at all.
Have you fenced it on the border? No.
No, that's not possible.
Too big.
It's too big.
Yeah.
And there's also, like, there's in Norway, everyone have a right to walk everywhere you want to walk.
That's right, yes.
Especially along the coast. So there's some rich people that bought cabins and stuff like the coast, and they try to put up fences and stop people, but they're not allowed. So you have the freedom of going anywhere. So, but we believe that the peace and tranquility of people living in the forest, especially the cabin area, we want to protect that as much as possible. So the road going in there is going to be closed for everyone except the owners and invited guests. So there's going to be a system where you won't have random people driving into those roads going into the forest. But you can't really stop someone coming with a boat up the river and then walking through the forest.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how you said that you reckon 50% of the people in Norway have probably heard of you?
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah.
Like,
so it's probably not 50, but it's like...
Well, whatever, but it's not, you're not just a fringe group of people doing something strange. And you gave me the impression that you thought, you know, at least the press were quite positive about it.
Yeah.
Is it like, is that a Norwegian thing? It's like, yeah, these people get let go for it. They're doing something good, you know. Yeah, or is that how your average Norwegian's thinking about it?
I think it's either or, right? Either there's a lot of people when you start discussing, like the first thing they say, they're not going to get the Norwegian healthcare, right? You're not going to be allowed to use my healthcare that I pay for if you're not paying taxes in Liberstad. That's the one side. And those arguments are so ridiculous because the healthcare in Norway is just fundamentally broken beyond belief. It was nice like 20 years ago because we had a lot of oil and spent a lot of money on it, but now it's horrible. So everyone have private insurance, right? I have private insurance, both pay for myself, and my employer have also for me. They have double up. So and when I got some issues with my shoulder, I just used insurance, and it's an email. 2 days afterwards, I'm having an MRI, right? My doctor asked me, do you have private insurance, right? Because then it could go fast, right? Because if you don't have any private insurance in Norway, you're going to be in a queue for months just for basic stuff. That's not good at all. So nobody cares. I mean, but most people believe it's good, right? Because they've been told since they were kids that it's good. And then we have the other group, which is sort of cheering us on and just thinking that it's really cool that someone does something special and different than everyone else. So I think it is something we have thought about before, that it's important to sort of get the people's support, especially people in a local municipality and stuff. Because the municipality itself, it used to be only 2,500 people living there. And our initial plan is like between 500 and 1,500 people living in Liberstad. So then we could take over everything, like the Free State Project in New Hampshire. That would be super easy. Like there's 2,500. But then the government in Norway forced municipalities to join. So now it's a much bigger one.
Mm.
And it's very different. But they're even further away. So some ways it's better.
What about tax then? Because you just said, oh, they're not paying tax. Presumably you're paying tax to the Norwegian government, but like, are you planning on not paying? Obviously...
That's one of the things that I always say, like, we're agile and you have to take each sort of threat at a time, right? So one of them is like the property tax in Norway, right? We could decide we don't want to pay the property tax and we get fight and stuff with that. So we don't care too much. So we just pay the property tax. But the thing is, like, as long as Liberstad is a farmland and we don't sort of change the regulation on each of the building from warehouse or something, the property tax is very low. It's like $500 a year.
Right? Per building?
For the whole property.
Oh, really?
Or for Liberstad.
But obviously...
if it had been zoned, right, it would be massive.
If you build a property and you're living in it, presumably in their eyes, you'd have to change the usage of it from warehouse to accommodation.
Yeah, we can argue and argue as long as we. So that's sort of one of our
ongoing things,
policies, like just postpone stuff and put it out there in the future. And there's a lot of you have a lot of freedom, right? So one of the things we have an organization. Right, so to be in Liberstad, you need to be a member. So we can have it's a private party, right? It's not an open party. Random people can't come to Liberstad and enjoy themselves. So it's only members. So that's one way of going around the regulations. And another one is like, there's a lot of things you can do in terms of construction, right? So you can prepare it for in the future, it could be lived in, right? But you can build it in bigger, better standards than what you normally would. That's some options you have.
Do you think, because of where you live, and I kind of mean Scandinavia as a whole, really, because I'm thinking of what's it called in Sweden? What's that place in the capital that area that was in the 60s and 70s was a really wild and free place, and it's kind of still is in
Denmark.
Sorry, Denmark. Yeah, yeah, Denmark. Yeah. What's it called?
Christiania.
Christiania. Yeah, yes. Right. Like no one stormed into Christiania and shut it down, did they? The government.
Oh, they do it all the time.
Do they?
All the time.
Oh, but
there's police there all the time, stopping people.
But is that right? Okay, I went there and I just figured that it's become a bit of a tourist attraction. Yeah, so it's kind of changed in its form.
You should see there's this video from this father. He was picking up his kid at kindergarten. It was on a bicycle. He just drove through it because it's the fastest way to get to pick up his kid. And he was stopped by the cops and put him down in the ground and was screaming and yelling and stuff. And that was just like a week or two ago.
But what's that got to do with Christianity?
I think he had a headset on and they wanted to check him for drugs or something and he didn't hear them initially and stuff and it just escalated.
So according to you then, the government of Norway coming in with guns and shutting you down is a real threat?
It is a real threat, like in the future or something, if we do something, and it's something we obviously prepare for. Initially, the first meeting that the regulation people, when they were coming up to Liberstad, the first meeting they wanted to have with us, they wanted to come up there for an inspection, they actually asked the police to be sort of...
with them.
Come with them. And the police said no.
Why? Too much hassle.
Well, yeah, they probably didn't care it's a problem. And it's like, it's not we're not dangerous, right? But if they come up with guns and want to stop us down, right, we're not going to go down without a fight because we're not going to get freedom if we just ask. We need to stand our ground, basically. So I think that's important to understand and be willing, sort of like, I'm old enough in my life now. I've done whatever I wanted, I needed to do. So the rest of my life is just Liberstad. And I would sacrifice my life for Liberstad.
You got a family?
I've got a family, yeah.
And what do they think about this? I mean, how many kids you got?
I got a daughter. She's 12. And she they had this political thing in class where they had to have different parties. And then they had to vote. Like this fictitious voting in school, and she didn't want to vote. And the teacher said, you don't need to vote. You can vote blank if you want to, but you have to vote. No, I'm not voting. And the teacher got angry, and she called me up, actually.
The teacher called
and,
you?
Yeah, and said she's sorry. she got agitated on our kid, right, because she was standing up for her rights. Because I don't even have to sort of... I don't have to sit there and dictate to her and tell like in details. She picks it up very quickly. She's very smart. So I just explain this. If you're voting, you're giving away your right to your life. You're telling other people to control you. That's what you're doing when you're voting. Mm. You're giving away. Right? Mm. And that's what I said all the time. So now it's like, the thing is like, if I started Liberstad when she was young, it's the same with vegan, right? I'm for freedom, so she can eat whatever she wants. Right? I'll make that food for her. But if she was born after I became vegan, I would most likely try to influence her more to vegan. Same with Anarchy as well. She has kids, and I think the only reason we sent her to kindergarten, we only did it when she was 2 years old, because people send them too early now. They get sick all the time. Right? 1 week of development when they're 1 and 2 years old is massive. Right? My daughter was almost never sick because she was just with us, not with too many other people. Every time we had visitors, sick. It's the same. So the only thing we've done to send her to school is to socialize. Right? She tells it to her teacher that, I learned more from dad than I ever learned at school. Right? And we don't even do homeschooling. It's not like sort of structured. But that's the thing, like in Liberstad right now, so John have two kids, like a daughter and a son, and they used to go to government schools, but now both of them are homeschooling. He started first with her older daughter doing homeschooling, and now they're doing it with her son as well. So John's wife, Sabrina, she's now homeschooling 100% with both kids, and that's super nice.
So going back to the site, how many plots have you sold? How many plots are...
125 to people from 33 different countries.
And what did you say there were in total? How many plots?
It's 250 plots, but people could buy more. Maximum 10, like 10,000 square meters.
Okay. And who are those 125?
Oh,
people, and like obviously.
Oh, there's
are they, and are they people that are living there?
It's crazy cool people. So we had this one guy. He's from South Africa. He came up in August. He it was 12, 13 degrees. It's usually hotter than that. So he's like used to South Africa temperatures, and it's like, it's embarrassing because it was so cold up here. But he's he got worried when there was like, there was some violence and stuff in South Africa, I think a year ago or something. And then he really started thinking, I need to move now. And then we have people from Brazil, at least two families that have come over from Brazil, from California, I think from Canada, from UK, Scotland, all of Europe, basically, Australia, people. So there's lawyers, there's doctors. One of the guys from Brazil, he's like, he's a surgeon, and also he has a hidden gun carry license, because he often goes out on emergency, right? So there might be a situation that is not clear yet, so he can carry a gun. And so we have medical doctors, as I said. We have people who just want to live life. And a bunch of IT people, I guess.
How many of these are in this any stage of building or actually living on site?
There's nobody that ever started building.
Why?
I have no idea. I would love to.
Are you waiting for the first person? Then
they're waiting for the first
they'll
person.
They'll see someone do it and go, all yeah. right.
So we know there's at least three Norwegians who want to build like in the closest, the first part where we actually, when we finish the road. So we're going to finish the road up there now, now before the winter. And there's this French guy. He's been living there in an apartment. So since he has the apartment, he hasn't sort of prioritized building his cabin, so he's going to build an A-frame. So he's very dedicated, and he's bought all the papers and everything to build. So he was supposed to start building this spring, but he didn't. So there's actually nobody has started building cabins in the forest yet. I don't really know why. We consider maybe it's sending out a survey and asking people, when do you sort of plan on doing? But there's different things. So one of the things, everybody needs to make sure that their property is properly marked up on a map and stuff. So there's some people that have done that. But there's also some people we need to do it for, because they can't come and visit. And so we have, we have 2-3 families from the Netherlands who have bought houses in Bjelland. One of them, she bought a farm, so they moved already up to the area, but they don't have the sort of urgency of building on their plot, basically. And they're basically coming to Liberstad every weekend for food and entertainment.
And how much are the plots, if you don't mind me asking?
It used to be like 3,500 euros. It was very cheap initially.
That's really cheap.
That's very cheap. But that was full risk. Like, there was no guarantee. And then right now, I think the price is 1,650 euros.
16,500. That's still a big plot, though, isn't it? That's like 100, what did you say it was?
That's 100 by 100 meters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a fair, I mean, you know, where I live, that's a big...
I mean, a regular house in Norway doesn't even have that property anymore, like a family house.
And say I was one of those plot owners and I had the money to buy a kit house, you know, one of those, and I was ready to go.
Yeah.
What kind of problems am I likely to encounter according to the local council, the government, the that? Because obviously that's part of the reason why people aren't doing it.
John mentioned to me that if you set up a building and you don't get any complaints for 8 years, then it can't tear it down.
That's kind of the same in a number of places. I've got a feeling we even have that rule.
Yeah. So the thing is, like, we're not going to complain if you build it.
Your two neighbors are pretty cool as well. So
and they're not going to see it because it's in the forest. So if you do it, like, it has to be the municipality have to see it with drones. I'm not sure if they use drones. The police might do it. But they have to use aerial photo, Google Maps. That doesn't update every year either. So they basically have to go up into the forest and survey and whatever. And there's going to be a gate, so they're not going to be allowed to drive up there, at least we're not going to open a gate for them.
They have to force it up.
You're relying on government incompetence, aren't you? Which is probably a good strategy, but also, you know, when they actually want to do something.
But the pain obviously is going to come to us, right? Because the government, who owns this cabin? Who owns this property? The government have no idea. It's only we who know who owns it. So it's our responsibility in the end.
But almost certainly they'll have a way to force you to give up that information, will you?
No,
or does it not even matter?
No, because that's the government system, right? In the government, we're not dividing up the property in the government registry, property registry. We have our own registry, right?
Yeah.
So it will obviously, like, I don't know how that's going to be, but we might have, like, in a contract or an agreement with the people who build there that says that you take the responsibility, right? And then if there would be any problems, sort of you have a contract with you, we need to give you credentials to the government or whatever. But the whole goal initially, in the very beginning, was to think about Liberstad as an umbrella. So we want to build an umbrella, right? So you're living under it, and they have all the government outside it. And that's also why we want to have a separate economy and use Citycoin instead of use Norwegian krone. So everything is in krone. And the thing is, like, we do garbage disposal for you, right? We go and pick up your trash, and then the company that does it delivers the trash to the corporation inside the Norwegian state, right? You have groceries, right? The groceries, we pay VAT on those, right? When we purchase it in stores in Norway, but you as a citizen, you don't need to care about that at all. So that's sort of the things, sort of way I'm thinking about the way free cities could function, right? So eventually you will have people who are like laws and regulations, and they could sort of be part of that umbrella thing. So if you have a lawyer, so every time you get a paper from the government, it just goes to this guy and he just generates an answer with ChatGPT. Right? That's the way we do it.
I've never seen that actually in action, but I've heard many stories about how easy it is to do.
I can send you a copy of the letters we've sent to the government, which is generated with ChatGPT.
And they presumably just create more and more red tape and more complications and more.
The first one last time, the first we generated with ChatGPT now was basically, we got, and it's so nice, right? The
polite.
Yeah, polite and stuff. It's like, yeah, we need to know exactly which law and paragraph we're broken, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And yes, they answered.
Did they?
Yeah.
So they tell, but then you know what you're doing wrong. So.
Yes, and then but that's also good, because most of it is like, because they don't even know the laws, right? They don't even know what they're regulating, right? So the roads that we built, they complained about that earlier, but in the last letter, we sort of got approval for it, right? Because they're used to the roads to be just a tractor driving into the forest and making a road. We're blowing up mountains and putting down rocks and making it proper, right? So we have the dump truck, which is 60 tons when it's loaded, right? So we're driving that dump truck. So the quality of the roads is much higher, right? So when they first saw this, right, they thought, oh, this can't be possible. Right? This is not legal, but it's not a problem at all, right? So that's also the thing is like, when they talked about the thing earlier about sort of, like, I saw this guy in New Hampshire. He got jail sentence for 8 years, I think. He ran the Bitcoin ATMs and some other stuff over there. It's like, I would never dare to do any freedom stuff in the U.S. with the legal system that they have there. It's dangerous, right? Well, in Norway, right? They have never experienced people who believe in freedom. They don't know how to react, right? And most people are friendly in Norway, and there are so few cops as well in Norway. And it's also super nice. You can go over a month and you don't see a cop car or a police officer. Try to do that in London.
I know. I mean, I used to be a journalist in the UK, and I never forget the night they sent me to spend the night shadowing a police force on a Saturday night in a large town.
Yeah.
And I realized there was only about five policemen working. And I was like, holy shit, this is a large town,
yeah.
you know, like, yeah. but what happens is they all go to the same place and they follow the crime, like one by one by one. And I think the same thing could happen in Norway. There may not be that many policemen, but if they decide to stop you,
yeah.
you can rest assured there'll be a long line of coppers right outside.
No. In Oslo, obviously, it happens in Oslo. But but I've been to Denmark a few times, and Denmark is very efficient in that regard. Because I used to be staying in a hotel, and there was some trouble in a bar. And like when the cops first come, it's like massive, a lot of cars, and one of them is like this big car with a lot of police officers that comes out. So they're much better in sort of reacting harsh and quickly. But in Norway, we don't have cops. And Japan is the country in the world with the least police officer per citizen. And Norway is also in the top 10 somewhere. So... And to get to Liberstad, it's like minimum 40 minutes drive for the police from the cities.
Yeah. From the city, where is it on the map?
So you have Kristiansand, it's a big city in Norway. It has international airport, and it's 55 minutes away from Liberstad. And also have international harbor stuff. The boat goes to Denmark and Germany. A lot of Dutch people. It used to be a boat going to the Netherlands as well, and now it goes to the south of Germany. And so that's the closest city, basically. So it's in the middle of South Norway, in the heart of South Nowhere. And I think we wrote that on a website some years ago. So it's fairly good climate. It's a bit higher than the city, so it's 160 meters above sea level. So the spring starts a little bit slower, and it starts getting cold a bit quicker. But some days it's a lot hotter than the city as well. But the thing is, like with the cities in Norway, it's like everything is heated by the ocean. That's why it's good climate in Norway, because we have the Atlantic Ocean coming. I think it's the Atlantic, right? I think it's Atlantic. So you have all the heat coming up, and that's why it's very good temperature in all of Norway. But all the cities is sort of in the ocean, so you get as long as you have wind, you don't even get snow, even though it's cold in the rest of the country.
What, where you are, you don't get snow?
We get snow. We get sometimes a lot of snow, but sometimes we also don't get too much. But in the cities along the coastline, they don't get much snow.
Hmm. If you imagine the future that you said you're going to sort of, you're kind of like dedicating your life to this thing now.
Yeah.
What's your scenario that you're expecting in 15 years' time? Like, be honest. Like, yeah. what are you expecting to sort of transpire here?
I think it's gone slower. Like, I think it was Bill Gates who had this quote some many years ago, but I don't remember exactly what it was. But I think the idea is that we underestimate the easy stuff and we overestimate the hard stuff or something like that. So the hard stuff is often much easier to do. And I work in IT, and people have all said that your job in IT and technology, you're never going to get replaced. It's the easy jobs that's going to be replaced, right? But AI is showing us that I'm the one losing the job first, not the guy cleaning or doing construction work. Their job is safe for now. But we're the intellectual jobs, we're losing it. So I think that we've done less than I wanted in Liberstad. As I mentioned, nobody had built cabins yet. I was expecting someone to start building. And it's going to be in a very eclectic society of cabins, right? There's not going to be like regulated in time type of construction you're going to have. There's rules on height and stuff just to be a good neighbor. But there's like, it's going to be fantastic because a lot of people have different ideas on design and everything. But a lot of things we've done come much further than I also believed that we would have. But I think that we've been doing this for 6 years now. We rented the property since 2016 for 1 year before we bought it, 1st of June 2017. So if anyone listening to this, you need to come to the Freedom Festival that we have every summer. It's in the end of July. That's super important to come there.
Tell us what happens at the Freedom Festival. What is it?
It's just a freedom festival from Wednesday until Sunday.
And but what goes on? Music, food.
Food. We had a brewery course. You can learn how to brew beer, and there was this guy doing called caving on wood, like creating
carving.
So I believe like in 10-15 years, I believe that we will be 250 people. I think most people will own guns. I want to build a shooting range. I think we will have multiple like guarded defense, because I've discussed this with John, because I have an idea about this onion type of defense, right? So you have different gates, right? And if they're going to come there, right, they're going to come for John or me, something like that. So you just need either you need to have a drone so John can just fly away, so they're not going to find it, or you just need to hide him. Right, so you need to have a defense with cameras. So if someone comes to take someone, we need to know it, right? We need to stop them as much as possible. And then you can get publication and media attention, right? If they would try to shut us down in any way. But we're peaceful, right? We're not hurting anyone. We're not even hurting the Norwegian economy, I would say. But since they don't want to allow us, right, beforehand, we also don't want to become a free city that sort of increases investment in Norway and business and everything, right? So it's up to the government. If they say, oh, it's okay, you can keep doing what you do, but you need to pay this fixed tax on your whole economy, for example. That's an idea John have, to sort of give a suggestion to the government. So you can pay 5 or 10% corporate tax for everything going on in Liberstad to the state of Norway. I don't believe that's possible, because they have so much money, right? So make such an agreement is going to be very expensive for us. And then like 250 people, and everybody is going to have a great time and be living in freedom. And I think it's I think all the free private cities that's going to grow up now globally, I think people are going to start moving around and visiting each other. So right now we have two citizens from Liberstad there in Montelibro right now. We're supposed to just go there for the conference, but they're staying there. I think they're going to stay there all winter. They were supposed to go to Greece. So that's our brewer and our mechanic. Right, so
you know why that is, though, because Norway's so bloody cold and Montelibro is nice.
Exactly.
That's your Achilles heel. It's the fact that it's too cold in this.
But that's also my personal goal is to in wintertime, travel to sort of the different type of projects in Honduras or Montelibro or Liberland or somewhere else. And I think a lot of people will do that, and it's like, yeah.
It's definitely, it's something that I hear more and more people talk about, this idea that a network of free cities is the way forward.
Yeah.
The only thing that slightly concerns me about that idea is, and this may be that this is what the market decides, I don't know, but because we talk about this a lot, in the simple fact that, for example, digital nomads currently are the kind of people that inhabit these places already.
Yeah.
But they're also the kind of people that don't stay still. And the worst thing that can happen to a free city is it either becomes empty or people are transient there.
Yeah.
The trick, I think, is in creating a community that stays. And there's a number of ways to do that. One, it could be the ideology. It could be the kind of thing that's going on there, the particular, you know.
Yeah, I know. We're going to build a ski slope.
Is that why you're blowing up the mountain?
No.
You've still got some other mountains,
right?
Yeah,
some other mountains. So now I'm going to build, we're going to build a ski slope where we have the elevator going up thing. So people, and then we also have the waters, so you can go ice skating and stuff. And so I think Norway is beautiful in wintertime. And that's I looked into the Gorge Gulch Chile project many years ago.
I don't know what that is.
It was a free state project in Chile.
Oh, okay.
Free city
what
project.
Was it called?
Gorge Gulch Chile.
Gorge Gulch?
Gort.
Gort Gulch.
From Ayn Rand. And that went bust, but it was like, and also before we started, the idea of Liberstad We looked internationally first, right? We weren't sort of decided that we're going to do it in Norway. But just popped into my mind, well, about Norway? Like, we can do it here. Like, it's just, and then we found this plot after looking at different properties. And it was just 40 minutes drive about me and John for different cities. It's just perfect. So clean water, you have the mountains, and you have the firewood, and unlimited amount of energy, basically. And solar panels, it also works very well in the area. So I think, and like, when you're used to the seasons that you have up north, right, you don't want to exchange that for perpetual summer. That is so beautiful. The biggest problem is the darkness, right?
Yes.
My sister's boyfriend, he's from Finnmark, north of Norway. It's pitch black all winter.
Yeah.
There's no sun. They don't even see the sun, right?
Yeah.
But in the summertime, the sun doesn't go down. You can actually see the sun all the time. So I think the seasons are very nice. And I think that's sort of, you just need to package it in a system where you have the cabins, which are well insulated. Like most buildings in Norway, it's like there's no problem in the wintertime. You don't need to spend that much energy if it's insulated pretty well and built with good construction. It makes it a bit more expensive, of course. But living in the cold is just super nice. But you don't want to do it all the time.
I know. Norway has a culture of people in tune with the seasons, let's say. It's reflected, I think, very much in your art, in your writing, in, you know, because it does have its dark side, obviously.
Yeah.
What's that book? That I told you I had a Norwegian girlfriend. She got me to read Hunger. Do you know?
Knut Thompson.
Knut Thompson, that's it.
There's actually on Netflix right now, there's a lot of, I don't remember the author, but there's a lot of Norwegian small books and stories that they have sort of made into videos.
Really?
So theater type of thing. You should check it out.
But I mean, something like Hunger, that I think that would be destroyed in visual form if it was on Netflix. It's a book you have to read to really... And if you know Norway in any... Even on surface level, it really helps you to understand, I think, like what... Or another one was it called Out with the Horses? This is a long time ago, but they were all very much tapping into the Norwegian psyche, the cold, the dark, but also... Because, you know, in your emotions, they go with it.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, it's like, you know.
I mean, there's, from Liberstad and Kristiansand going up, there you come to a place called Hovden. It's a ski resort, fairly big ski resort. And I was up there, and then they had these plaques on this track you could walk. And it was about the Vikings. I didn't even know the Vikings were that far up. And it's like, it's very far to go with even a car. It's like a 3-hour drive. And some of the places where you come with the car, like there's water, there's a mountain, and there's water, complete water. So how could you even come up there? And it's like the first settlers in Norway, they had some challenge, and they probably loved harsh weather and sort of challenges and sort of stuff that destroys you, I think, mentally, right? Just sitting there in the forest eating berries, right?
In the dark.
In the dark. And then suddenly you try a mushroom, right? And
yes.
And then you get a high.
Yes. And then it all makes sense.
Yeah,
And then you start painting.
That's a funny thing. Like in Norway, we have magic mushrooms that grows, and that's harmful. But it's illegal. As soon as you pluck it up, you've broken the law.
Right, yeah, it's pretty much the same where I live.
Ridiculous.
And then, in fact, now, well, what are we now? In around October time, the fields around where I live are just awash with magic mushrooms everywhere. Like as many as you can see. But you're right. If you picked them and put them in a bag, you get quite a serious prison sentence.
Yeah.
I think they've just upped the status of mushrooms to a much worse drug, which is really, really
it's so ridiculous,
beyond belief,
the whole thing.
Yeah,
and that sort of reminds me about, we're talking about anonymity and free speech, right? I like to speak my mind a lot on Facebook and stuff, but things on stuff like drugs, I don't post anything about it because I've seen other people. There's this Norwegian drugs Twitter theme going on. There's a lot of people, they want to legalize or at least regulate drugs a lot more in Norway. And there was this female, she was positive about legalizing. She was pregnant. What happens? Of course, police and healthcare people, they come to her home and do forced drug test. Right?
Really?
Yes.
But wait a minute. Can you... Does that, is that even possible? What, testing someone after the... So they're not sitting there doing whatever, smoking a spliff?
No, they're just publicly posting that they're positive posts about drugs and stuff, that they want to legalize it.
But that's bizarre.
Yeah.
So what, the idea was that if she tested positive, they were going to prosecute?
Yeah, something like that. But the point is, like, just talking about it online, you might get a visit by the police, and I think it's just a serious problem in terms of people not, because nobody posts anything on Facebook any longer. Like, there's no opinions. It's just
I thought
photos.
You said that there weren't many police in Norway. What are they doing, knocking on pregnant women's doors for smoking a spliff?
It's
like,
that's what they're doing. They're sitting on Facebook, right? But it's the problem is that it's people who sort of tell on other people. Yeah. Right? So that's the way society works, right? As you mentioned earlier, that in London or wherever you were in England, they had only 5 cop cars, right? The thing is, like, most people, we hurt ourselves, right? The dog doesn't need to hurt us. It's the sheep hurting ourselves. And that's super important to have a society that is well functioning without sort of having a police officer per person or a soldier per person. You need to get everyone to police themselves. And that's why the thing about transforming other people or teaching them freedom and stuff, and get into these arguments and discussions, like, they're sitting there sort of defending ideas that weren't their own original ideas. It's just something they were taught in school and they never sort of properly thought about it, but they're still, like, passionately posting on Facebook defending this position
Well, on that note, the defending of freedom, I think that's a fair position to end on.
Yeah.
Sandra, thanks for coming in. I hope that actually I'll visit your place at some point, because we really want to come up and have a look.
Yeah.
Just like we did Montelibro last time, and we managed to sort of combine it with a trip to some other things that were going on there. Unfortunately, we're not as well funded as we would like to be, so we have to pick and choose.
And guess what? What you're going to do when you come to Liberstadt, you're going to do something you're not doing today.
What's that?
That's live streaming on radio.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we have a pirate radio.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Well, over the radio wave, not over the internet.
FHM 90.
Okay. And who listens to that?
We're broadcasting, so it's actually... You can listen to it down in the town right now. But we can boost it up, actually, and I think we can send out of the country if you want to.
And how often do you have radio programs?
A few times a week. It depends on who wanna sit there and drink and play music, basically.
Oh, but that sounds good.
We have a long-term plan on having our own record label and also a recording studio for podcasts and stuff.
I was going to say, if you're making a radio show, you should automatically be a podcast.
Yeah.
Because that way it's worldwide.
Yeah.
I mean, Montelibro has got their own podcast. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the YouTube's videos.
Yeah. They've got a lovely podcast studio there as well. Somebody, one of the guys there, bought all the stuff, and it's a proper studio.
Yeah.
I ended up recording in their studio there because I brought my own gear, and I was like, no, this is much better than
that. Yeah, nice.
So, but yeah, that'd be great. Well, I'll definitely be up for that. And thanks for coming in tonight, and good luck with your speech here.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm looking forward to hearing you speak on stage.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.